Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it was 31 years ago today that Republican President George Herbert Walker Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law. And I remember this day. I actually remember it pretty well because I remember my conservative friends at the time going, this is the end of the world. It's all over. Businesses are going to go under. They're never going to be able to comply. It's going to be horrible. It's Armageddon. It's the end. It's going to bankrupt the country. We're all going to be standing on the corner with the ramp accessible sidewalks, and nobody's going to have a job. Well, here we are 31 years later, and I don't see the I missed the end of the world, and I didn't sleep through it. But here to share some thoughts on what did actually happen, because it wasn't the end of the world. I've asked Mia Ives-Rubley to come talk with us. Mia is the director of the Disability Justice Initiative there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. Mia, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me on.
So I'm sure you've heard this frame. It's going to be the end of the world. We can't possibly comply with all of these demands. It's terrible, terrible.
Yes, yes. The sky is falling, et cetera. I just want to sort of age you for a second. I do not remember the ADA being passed. I was 6 years old when it was passed.
Yeah, I remember. You know, and look, I'm old, so I get that. And I remember, George H.W. Bush signing this and not believing that it was actually going to happen. Mm-hmm. I was actually surprised that a Republican president would sign it. And there was some bipartisan support. I look at it now, there's no way in a cold day in Hades that you are going to get a Republican. At least, I don't think you get one Republican to sign on to this at this moment.
Probably, I don't know.
That's just my view, because we're so, so divided. And something like this seems like common sense. We want people to be able to get around. We want people to have the best opportunities they can possibly have. And I don't think some of the things that it required were all that onerous. Things that now we take for granted. I mean, I go to a sidewalk that on the corner doesn't have, the thing that I can ride my bike up and down. I'm going, why isn't this wrong? Get this fixed. I mean, we've now taken a lot of that stuff for granted. It's now who mm-hmm. we are.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the things that are, implemented through the Americans with Disabilities Act are what we term in the disability community as curb cuts. Because of the fact that the items, the sort of accommodations that are created are now super helpful for everybody in the United States and even abroad. So yeah, there's quite a few things, not only just curb cuts, but elevators. We look at automatic doors that everybody loves, particularly because of COVID now, and nobody wants to touch anything. So there's a lot of benefits that the ADA has created that a lot of people don't understand and are extremely important in the United States today.
Right.
You think of COVID, right? And you think of all the people who are working from home now. And a lot of those accommodations were created because of disabled workers who needed a way to be able to work remotely.
Right. And, this isn't just about curb cutouts and about, making, businesses more accessible. This is about jobs. This is about opportunity. Mm-hmm. This is about livelihoods and the reasonable accommodations that employers should have to make to help people. And that doesn't seem too onerous to me. I know there are some extreme cases that my conservative friends love to throw out. But for the most part, it's just making reasonable accommodations to help people. And look, as all of us are getting a little bit older, you start looking at this going, 31 years ago, it wasn't that big of a deal. You start looking at it now down the road, maybe another 10 years, you go, I may need that. So we all may need that at some point.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. I think one thing that people don't realize is that like 1 in 4 people in the United States are actually protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And so, and that's just counting right now, and we're looking at the boomer generation Particularly people with long haul COVID, all of these individuals will be protected under the ADA. And I think, a lot of folks don't realize what these protections mean, whether they're aging at their job and they feel like they're going to ha be discriminated against because maybe they need more accommodations at their workplace. And I think, it's very beneficial to understand this sort of set of laws that protect folks, particularly when looking at employment.
Yeah. Now, the president did today say that they're going to look at the long term effects of COVID, the long haul folks that you said, and can that could be considered a disability under the ADA. And I got to tell you, my first reaction was negative. My first thought was, and hear me out, everyone who before today had COVID, we should be taken care of because you didn't have a choice. There weren't a lot of options for you. If you got it and you have the symptoms and the long haul problems, we should be helping. Anyone after a certain date, when the vaccine is available and you chose to go, no, I'm not doing it, and then you got sick, I'm losing sympathy for people who do dumb things. Help me on why I should support the idea of this for everybody and not just saying, hey, after such and such a date, if you don't get the vaccine, nothing for you. In fact, no health care for you. You did this to yourself. You're responsible. You take it on. Why am I wrong?
Why you're wrong is because that I, in general, believe that everybody deserves health care no matter what choices that they make. And in particular, understanding that not helping individuals is actually going to hurt the general economy and hurt the communities that these people live in. I think that it's an understanding that even if an individual does choose not to get the vaccine, and that may be because of personal reasons, it may be because of issues with healthcare issues,
Or it could just be
whether
you're
it's
stupid.
healthcare access. I would say there's a lot of misinformation that is going around. And that unfortunately is affecting people's judgment. And I would say, in general, we're talking about a public health issue and a public health crisis. And even if we say that, we will leave out specific population, that's going to affect the broader population. And we really have to look at this as a general public health issue.
See, there you go with your logic again. It just seems better to be reactionary and say, you know what, if you're too stupid to get covered, shame on you. You chose it. If you took the axe and chopped off your own hand, that's you. But here you go with your logic again, turning it around on me. But here's the thing, and this is where I look at this and I go, we should be protecting people who have disabilities because someday I may have one. But what do you say to the person who goes, you know what, now you're including COVID, now you're including all this stuff. Again, back to the argument 31 years ago. We really can't afford it.
I think that that's a fallacy. We have quite a bit of money in the coffers, and I think that it's just generally trying to decide what is most important in our budget, right? Our budget is a moral document, and we have to make a decision on what's going to benefit the people in the United States the most. And that means taking care of the folks that are most marginalized to help uplift the general population. Because if we help the most marginalized within the communities that we live in, we are going to help everybody. I think that's something that's very important for folks to know, is that the disability community is an extremely important part of our communities. They are individuals who are intelligent. They are individuals who are creative, passionate, driven individuals who are often facing numerous barriers to getting employment, to being able to get health care, to being able to get education. And to be able to uplift this part of the community will help the general population. It will help ensure that less folks fall behind, and we have similar crises of these astronomical proportions of, you know, homeless individuals, and other issues that are happening in our society today.
Now, Mia, you said you aged me, age shamed me a minute ago by saying, you know, you don't remember it, but you know, you look back at the history of the ADA, you know, what difference would your life have been had we not 31 years ago decided to pass this? What opportunities would you have had as someone who has disabilities? You know, what would your life have looked like today? I don't think you'd be running the Disability Justice Initiative there at the Center for American Progress, but I don't know that. Where do you think you would have been?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thought process, because what we like to, in the disability community, we term ourselves as the ADA generation, because we're individuals who were born and raised sort of with the ADA already in place, right? So we're individuals who have already had the privilege of understanding that we have basic human rights. And before the ADA, that was not the case in terms of our US government, right? We didn't have the basic right to vote. We didn't have the basic right to, you know, do quite a bit within our communities. And so for me, as an individual who grew up with that understanding, I think it provided me with a template to understand that I was going to go to college, that I was going to get an education, that I was going to get a job afterwards. I think, unfortunately, as an individual with a significant disability, I would be facing a headwind to be able to get where I am today. And that could have meant that I would have been institutionalized, which, let me just say, there's still quite a few people that are still institutionalized today. But as for me, I would have likely been institutionalized as an adult, and not been given the opportunities to get to where I am today. No.
No, I mean, that's a great thing, and good on you for the work that you've done. So then the question then becomes of, you know, you've moved the ball a little bit forward, past generation opened some doors for you. What's next? Is there a way to make this better? Do you think we're at a significant point? Where do you see the future?
I think what folks need to understand is the ADA is the floor and not the ceiling. So folks need to understand that, yes, we now have this basic framework of understanding that disabled people have human rights. They have specific rights, particularly around public accommodations, employment, telecommunications, et cetera, right? But what we need to start understanding is that there are systems in place that make it hard to get even these basic foundations sort of established. So things that we need to address disability poverty and the poverty trap. So that means addressing system sort of safety net programs like SSI, like SSDI, to ensure disabled people are able to utilize those programs to be able to bounce up into and out of bounce out of poverty, right? So we need to address programs like that require asset limits, which basically means that you can't save, that provide a basic standard of living that's under the poverty line, right? Individuals who get the basic payment is $794, I believe, per month, which doesn't even afford you rent in any state across the United States, right? The basic rent, I believe the average rent for one bedroom apartment across the United States is a little over $1,000. So that's not going to cover your basic rent. And then we're talking about copays for health, you know, going to the doctors. We're talking about food. We're talking about other maintenance issues. that you need to pay. So really addressing those programs is a significant thing that we need to deal with. Also, there's a little tiny a program called 14C, which is in the Fair Wages and Hours, which basically states that individuals with disabilities can be paid below minimum wage.
Right.
And so that means that companies are allowed to pay people literally cents on the dollar. It's literally, you know, sweatshop rates, right? That the average payment on 14C is $2.15 an hour. And that is literally trapping individuals with disabilities in poverty.
Yeah, I think you make more in prison than that.
Yeah, yeah. And so what we are literally saying is that we need to make sure that this program goes out of business and that individuals are paid their fair wages.
Yeah.
And so those are some of the examples that we can do to ensure that disabled people can get out of poverty and can establish real lives in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, good on us for getting to where we are, but there's still work yet to be done.
Yes, definitely.
And I look at this, and, you know, again, I give George H.W. Bush credit, you know, that some things he did that I thought were good, and this is one of those. This is one of those things that I thought was important, mm-hmm. and I think making it better down the road is important. Because, look, you know, any one of us, something could happen at any minute that would put us in a negative situation, and which is why I think we need to have these safety nets in place to help catch us. I appreciate you taking time for us and sharing some thoughts on this. Always great talking with you. I wish you the best. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Good stuff, as always. Mia Ives-Rubley, she's the director of the Disability Justice Initiative there at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, their website. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Do you think expanding this is something we can do, something we should do? Or again, do we go back to where when I was a kid, it's the end of the world. It's going to bankrupt all of us, and we're going to all be standing on the corner with no jobs, but at least we'll have ramps. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.